Well, can time really change things, change people, change our perceptions of people? Listen to this from the book Living Above the Level of Mediocrity by Chuck Swindoll. In 1947, San Francisco's Potrero Hill was not only a poor South City neighborhood, it was a real ghetto. That was the year Orrin was born. Rickets, a poverty-related disease actually caused by malnutrition, was Orrin's major problem. His vitamin-mineral deficient diet caused his bones to soften. His legs began to bow under the weight of his growing body. Even though the family was too poor to afford braces, Orrin's mom refused to sit back, sigh, and resign herself to the inevitable. She rolled up her sleeves and took charge. She rigged up a homemade contraption in hopes of correcting her son's pigeon-toed, bow-legged condition. How? By reversing his shoes. Right shoe, left shoe, left shoe, right shoe. Plus an improvised metal bar across the shoe tops to keep his feet pointing straight. It didn't work perfectly, but it was good enough to keep the boy on his feet and ultimately able to play with his buddies. By the time he was about 6 years of age, his bones had hardened, his legs were still slightly bowed, his calves were unusually thin, and his head was disproportionately large. Nicknames from other kids followed him around, pencil legs, waterhead, but he refused to let all that hold him back. He compensated by acting tough. Street gangs on Potrero Hill were common. The gladiators, sheiks, Roman gents, Persian warriors. By age 13, Orrin had fought and won his way to being president of the gladiators. For all the fighting, he was arrested only 3 times. That was the crowning achievement of his early youth. Those who don't know his background could easily think he got all the breaks. As they look at him today and see this fine, refined gentleman, they would assume he's always been wealthy. He lives in the exclusive Brentwood district of Los Angeles, drives a luxurious car, and has his elegant office in an elite bank building. He is now a busy executive with his own production company. He personally handles most of his own financial affairs and business negotiations. He has contracts with the media and various entertainment firms and agencies. In today's terms, Orrin has made it. That plush office with the name on the door belongs to Orenthal James Simpson. Yes, none other than the Juice, O.J. Simpson. And you see, when Pastor Chuck Swindoll wrote that letter or that article, that little devotional, he was hoping that that would encourage people, and it did. I mean, for all practical purposes, you and I watched O.J. Simpson move from amazing college football player to the pros, to Hertz commercials, to movies, and even being a part of the lineup with Monday Night Football. Well, he was born July 9th, 1947, nicknamed the Juice. Born in San Francisco, as I already mentioned, 6'1", 210 pounds, USC football player, 1969, first round, first pick by the Buffalo Bills. Ultimately played for the Bills and for the 49ers. Listen to some of these stats. 5-time Pro Bowl, 5-time first team All-Pro, NFL Most Valuable Player, NFL Offensive Player of the Year, Burt Bell Award, AP Athlete of the Year, NFL Offensive Player of the Year, Burt Bell Award. Just amazing. 4-time NFL Rushing Leader, 2-time NFL Rushing Touchdowns Leader, AFL All-Star, NFL 1970s All-Decade Team, NFL 75th Anniversary All-Time Team, a national champion in college, Heisman Trophy, Maxwell Award, Walter Camp Award, 2-time unanimous All-American. The career NFL statistics, 11,236 rushing yards, an average of 4.7 yards per carry, rushing touchdowns, 61. and ultimately making it not just to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but to the College Hall of Fame. Amazing. And as we look at his life, what is remembered most now is what happened in 1994. He's arrested and charged with the murders of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Goldman. Now, he was acquitted by a jury after a lengthy and internationally publicized trial. The families of the victims subsequently filed a civil suit against him. In 1997, a civil court awarded $33.5 million judgment against Simpson for the victims' wrongful deaths. In 2007, he's arrested in Las Vegas, Nevada, and charged with the felonies of armed robbery and kidnapping. In 2008, he was convicted and sentenced to 33 years imprisonment with a minimum of 9 years without parole. And he served his sentence in Lovelock, Nevada. And on July 20th, 2017, he's granted parole. He was eligible for release October 1st of last year, October 1st, 2017, and he's released shortly after midnight on that date. Who knows where his life will go from here, but how sad. Most people you talk to believe that he committed those murders and he got away with it. There's documentaries, there's docudramas that are made. One of the most watched docudrama was just one last year that came out. And it makes me think of that verse in 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 27. It says, "How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished." And so we see in the life of Saul, the king, and in a lament from David over the king that was so high and lifted up, how the mighty have fallen. And we see that in the life of O.J. Simpson. He had it all. He had it all. And he could not control what really mattered. To keep a marriage together, to keep a life together, to handle jealousy and rage and anger. Money off the charts. He was able to even buy a dream team of attorneys to cover him. And yet, money wasn't enough. The sex wasn't enough. All the other things that came along with that lifestyle weren't enough. And so, as we look at that life, we think, boy, if I had something like that, that would never be the case. Well, look at your life right now. How are you doing? You've probably got it pretty good compared to most. Count your blessings. Humble yourself. Acknowledge your need for the Lord and look to Him for strength and help. I pray for O.J. Simpson. I pray the best on his life. Let's not follow in his footsteps.